Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, October 13th, 2012. This is episode 917. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone at the top, and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest phone at gazelle.com.
How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, digital photography, anything that's
he's coming in now.
Anything that has a chip in it. 8888. Ask Leo is my phone number if you want a question.
Yeah.
Or a comment.
Yeah.
Or a suggestion. 888-827.
I'll take it here.
Okay, you there, Leo?
Mm-hmm. 36. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. outside the U.S. is Skype.
All right, I'm going to turn you on.
Similar product, and you should be able to call and get into the show. 8888. Ask Leo.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a new love in my life. I want the whole world to know it's not about the iPhone 5 anymore. It's about the 5.5, the 5.5 inches of the Galaxy Note 2. Wow, this thing is huge. I'll tell you, it's very, you know, I understand people's kind of frustration with this process. Remember when, maybe you don't, but I do, when the question of the day was always, well, should I buy a computer now? Because there's going to be a better one. And we basically, the conclusion always was, well, look, yes, the day you get it home, it starts losing value, but what are you going to do, wait? Well, computers don't change that much anymore, do they? It really isn't. That question doesn't come up that much anymore with computers, but it does with cell phones. Holy moly. How long? I knew this would happen, and you probably, if you know me, knew it would happen too. How long did I, 3 weeks for the iPhone? And then now I've moved on. I'm fickle. And I have to say, it was getting a little frustrating with the iPhone 5. Even though it's a little bit bigger screen, and I mean a little bit bigger, it's the same width. It's, you know, it's one icon row higher. That means that the keyboard is exactly the same as the old iPhone. And it's hard to use for somebody like me with sausage-sized fingers. And I don't mean cocktail weenies. I mean Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage. I mean these, you know, and I think most guys, or many guys, have the same issue. Maybe a few women. Yeah, with this big one, this big puppy, man, I could just type away. And you know, it's funny, the thing people look at and they go, well, you can't put that in your pocket. Sure you can. Fits right in your breast pocket if you're a man. I'm sure for women it would fit in just fine. So, anyway, this is the Galaxy Note 2 is going to be out in the U.S., I think in the next couple of weeks. And I was going to wait, but I can't wait. You know me. And you can order. It's out in the UK and in Europe, I think now. And you can order an unlocked version That's what I did with the Galaxy S3. You can order an unlocked version. And, I think I paid $700 from a company called Expansys. That's about what an unlocked version would cost, an unsubsidized version would cost here, too. So it's not a big deal for me because this is my job. And, I like my job. This is why I chose my job, so I'd always have the latest and greatest. So now, and I suspected that this would be a great phone. I like the original Galaxy Note. I love the Galaxy S3. It's not that I'm an Android fanboy. I think the iPhone is a great phone. In fact, I waited, I'll say it again. I've said it before. I waited now in line 6 hours to get the first iPhone and was happy to do it and glad I did it. And it really did reinvent. It changed. It reinvigorated the cell phone market. It was the first really useful smartphone. And I also acknowledge, and the jury found, that Samsung and others copied the iPhone when it first came out because they had no better idea. But as time's gone by, many companies have improved on the iPhone. And Apple has moved, not glacially, but at a stately pace to upgrade the iPhone once a year. Kind of incremental improvements. That's as it should be. That's kind of how the company works. And I wouldn't expect revolutions every year. But Android, every few months, there's a new phone. Galaxy S2, S3, Note, and Note 2 all followed within a year and a half. So while Apple is slightly increasing the size of the screen, this thing is 5.5 inches. It's huge. It's huge. So, for somebody like me who has big fingers, who wants a big phone, wants a big screen, this is almost, I've called it, and I think Samsung has adopted this term, a phablet, a phone and a tablet. And nowadays, since the smartphone, I think for many of us, is as much a computer, maybe more a computer than a phone, why not have a little bit bigger screen? Some people say, well, you look silly talking into it. First of all, I rarely talk into it. And when I do, I often use a headpiece. But I don't think I look. I look like probably I have a slightly small head in a normal-sized phone. That's all. By that man's hands are large, but his head is so small. I don't know. I like it. I like it. So it's. Now, I'm not saying it's for everybody. The iPhone 5 is a beautiful work of art. Although I have to point out that in less than 3 weeks, how long is it? Is it 3 weeks? I guess it's 3 weeks. I've chipped the heck out of that sucker. I'm very, people said initially, oh, this thing is, this metal scratches easily, it's soft. And I tell you where, the back is not particularly soft. But the edge, the beveled edge around the side of it is fairly soft. I mean, it's aluminum, and it gouges easily. And I now have, it looks like somebody's been nibbling on my phone. And I haven't dropped it. Well, maybe I dropped it once. Maybe, I mean, I don't remember dropping it at all. I don't have a case for it because Apple doesn't tell anybody, right? We're not going to tell you what the phone's like till it comes out. You can make a case then. Well, and I've ordered cases, but in the 3 weeks before, the cases still aren't out, and in the 3 weeks, I've dinged that thing up like crazy. So if you do choose an iPhone 5, and it is a beautiful phone, and maybe you like the iOS, maybe you like the apps you've got. Although there's app parity for the most part between the iPhone and the Android phone. Now, next month, we're going to see Windows 8 phones, and who knows? I might be saying in a month from now, oh, forget that Note 2. It's so October. The new hot phone is the HTC 8X. Who knows? And you don't have to follow me. Goodness knows, no one could. I mean, that'd be crazy. That'd be crazy talk. I'm a reviewer. I have to try them all. But I have to say, and I've said this before, the good news is, you have a choice. You have a great choice now. These things have really improved, and there's even with Samsung, they've rumored they're going to put out a 4-inch Galaxy S3, so there'll be 4, 4.3, 4.8, 5, and 5.5-inch screens in the Galaxy family. You pick the size you want. Oh, and let's not forget the tablets, right? There's a 7 and a 10-inch tablet. So they range from 4 to 10 inches in pretty even steps. That's pretty impressive. You do have a choice. You have a choice of carrier now, too, because Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile all have excellent phones. I think this Galaxy Note, the rumor is, we don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint will all have it. They all have the iPhone. We have a choice. We have a choice. If you, I'm looking at the chat room. Amiga Dave says, Leo's sweating because he carried this phone in. It's okay. It's a little big, but it, you know, it's funny. It's actually not very thick. It's very thin, and it's actually slightly narrower and thinner than the its predecessor. It's just a little bit taller to get that 5-inch screen in there. It isn't that, you know, it's, but I don't know what the, I'll look up the weight. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We don't have to just talk about phones. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Coming up, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I don't have to go to gym class anymore. I have a Galaxy Note 2. I'm pumping iron, just walking down the street.
You know, it's actually not very heavy. In fact, that's one of the beauties of this thing. These phones are so thin now and light that even a 5-inch screen... I'm sorry, I'll stop talking about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you got a question, a comment, a suggestion. We have a great website, too, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. You know... It's true. Geeks should have big, heavy phones because then we'd get a little, you know, exercise in between Call of Duty and Big Bang Theory. We could get a little exercise in there. If you go to techguylabs.com, you'll find the chat room. That's where our geeks get their exercise, typing, 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 scribble, scribble, scribble. TechGuyLabs.com. Click the chat link. You can join 1,000 people, usually around 1,000 people during every show. What's really nice about the chat room for me, from my point of view, is it's kind of my brain. I've been doing these kinds of shows, Tech Talk Radio. I started in talk radio in 84, but I started Tech Talk Radio in around 91. And when I was young, 20 years ago, and by the way, the computer industry was not nearly as complicated. I could remember everything. I knew everything. And, you know, I didn't have the Google then anyway, so I had to. But I did do something even then, right from the beginning, I started a chat room. Because I knew that one day, 20 years down the road, I'd be old and my brain would be atrophied and I wouldn't remember. And there'd be a lot more to remember and I wouldn't remember everything. So the chat room, see, I've externalized my brain over the last 20 years. Weekend by weekend, I've poured my knowledge into this chat room. People say, you know, the singularity is coming. Someday computers will be as smart as humans, and you could pour your brain into a machine, and you'll live forever. Forget that. I got something better. It's made of people. It's the chat room. They don't know it. Shh, don't tell them. But every weekend, actually, most of them are there 24/7. to be brutally frank, they absorb all this information, not just from me, but from my podcast network all week long. All the brilliant people we have there, like Tom Merritt and Iyaz Akhtar and Sarah Lane, and pouring their knowledge. Scott Wilkinson, Steve Gibson, Paul Therod, Mary Jo Foley, Jeff Jarvis, Gina Trapani, all the hosts on the network. They pour their hard-earned knowledge into the chat room. The chat room, like a sponge, absorbs it. And then on the weekend, I just sit here. I do the radio show, I go, I don't know, chat room. And they tell me. They regurgitate all that information. They're so smart. So you want, now that I've described it so beautifully, would you like to be a part of it? Oh, boy. I made that very appealing, didn't I? 8888 Ask Leo. The chat room is irc.twit.tv. It's web-based, so you can just go in there and participate. And the website is techguylabs.com. That's where we put all the repository of knowledge. Big Ginge, who lives in Great Britain. See, we have listeners all over the world, says he is Leocritus of Borg. you know, I've been stalling, and you probably could tell, couldn't you, Kyle Benham, musical director, board operator extraordinaire. I'm not getting into the call screening stuff. It's rejecting me. So why don't you just tell me who the first call of the day is, and I'll get to it from there.
Cool. We're going to Alex in Dallas.
Alex in Dallas. You're first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Alex. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I could be better.
You probably, I'm guessing. Wait a minute. Don't tell me. I'm going to read your mind. You have a technology problem.
I do.
Wow.
I do.
Wow.
You're brilliant.
Amazing.
So I have my master's in enterprise systems, and I'm having to call you.
Wait a minute. You have a master's degree, and you're calling me?
I know. I know.
Holy cow. I'm honored.
I know. This is embarrassing. Anyways.
Hey, you're not just calling me. You're calling the Borg of the chat room, you see.
That's true. And in any case, it's a 2010 MacBook Pro, and I'm getting kernel panics.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. I'm thinking it's might be the logic board or something like that.
It probably is. I'll tell you, so when you get a blue screen of death in Windows or a kernel panic in OS X, those are, of course, the hardest crashes. They're crashes that really are, no program can cause that kind of crash because these computers now are operating with I don't have to tell you, with protected memory. Ring zero, which is the most protected area, the kernel, cannot be addressed by a program, even a program gone rogue. So there's only two possibilities when you get a kernel panic. It either means drivers do have to access that area. So it could be a driver going wrong. So it could be software, but it's much, much more likely something in hardware. So it's either very low level. Have you, believe it or not, you still in the 2010 Max and later can still clear the parameter RAM. Remember that?
No, I do not.
PRAM. So this is where somebody of my age might be of value to you. It's one of the first things you should try on a Macintosh, which is restart the Mac. Okay, so actually what you want to do is shut it down and remove power and really get it down to zero, right?
Okay.
Now, here we go. This is the fun part. When you turn it back on, holding three keys, Option P and R.
Okay.
For parameter RAM. Believe it or not, they still, even on modern-day Macs, use parameter RAM. You keep holding Command-Option, P and R, four keys. This is the equivalent of the three-key salute in Windows. Command-Option, P and R, and you'll see it. It'll go boom, and it'll start over. Do that a couple of times.
Got it.
Now, what that does is, and if this could cause a logic panic, kernel panic. The parameter RAM is like the BIOS on Windows. It's non-volatile memory. And if it got corrupted, it could cause that. So that's one thing to do. Now, let's see.
I guess the other option is to pay out the wazoo to Apple or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Apple makes it so there's no user serviceable parts inside, right?
Yeah.
Can you remove the battery on that 2011 MacBook? No, you can't. I think you can't.
It's a 2010 MacBook.
2010, you might be able to. Look on the bottom and see if there's a quarter-sized button that you can turn and remove it. If you can, that's kind of what you want to do because that will really shut it down good.
Okay.
If you can't, and none of the new Macs can you. What you're going to be resetting is the parameter RAM or the SMC, both of which could cause problems. The system management controller. That's an Intel thing.
Okay.
What we're doing is hard, high, low level fixing. But if none of this helps, the other thing to do is to boot from your you have a disk,
right?
So boot from your system disk, okay? And your system disk will now run and you'll be in the operating system. See if you still have kernel panics. If you do, it's your logic board, and now you do have to bring it in.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater guru from the Home Theater Geeks podcast and HomeTheaterSecrets.com. Great to see you once again, Scott Wilkinson.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here as always.
We got a little announcement. We've moved Home Theater Geeks back an hour so that you, as for scheduling purposes, and that means 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Mondays.
Correct.
On the Twit Network. You can watch live at twit.tv, or you can download after the fact. We make audio and video on-demand versions available at twit.tv/HP ATG. Scott also answers questions not only here, Scott at TechGuyLabs.com, but also on his column, brand new and really great, at HomeTheaterSecrets.com.
It's actually HomeTheaterHiFi.com.
It's HomeTheaterHiFi.com.
Right.
There are no secrets. Well, it is the secrets of home theater and hi-fi.
That's right. Revealed.
Yeah. Revealed.
Revealed.
And there he is. And right, boy, you are on the front page. Do they do that because it's Saturday?
No.
Look,
they're actually being very nice to me.
They love you.
I just disappeared. Oh no!
He slid out of the way. I can't get him back.
No, they're being very nice to me. They're promoting my column very well.
Wonderful.
You know, I have some visibility in the industry, so they're taking advantage of it. And I'm saying, oh, that's great. Wonderful. Thank you.
Shocking. I would never take advantage of Scott. Oh, wait a minute. So, gosh, I have so much to talk about with you. I am setting up a second home theater in my house because now I have an upstairs and a downstairs. And, of course, one can't be more than 10 feet away from a television at any time. That's the new.
Of course.
That's
not
the law.
And, yeah, exactly.
So I got a Parian speakers. Now, I haven't had a chance to really try them out. I like to break them in a little while and stuff. And a Denon.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And a Denon amp. But I, one of the, and I'm going to review this too, but I haven't had a chance to do it. I'm still unpacking. But Roku's stick just came out, the MHL stick. So this, the idea, Roku, for those who don't know, Roku is a way of adding internet to your television. In fact, most of the times it's better than the smart apps that come with your TV, even if your TV is already internet enabled. But it was always an external box with an HDMI plug and an internet plug or Wi-Fi. But now, because of this new MHL port, this new HDMI port, I could plug this into my Onkyo receiver, which has an MHL port, and just add Roku capability instantly. It's amazing.
It's so cool. It is so cool. This is a trend that I think is very important in the entire industry. And in fact, I got a letter, an email from Anita Lampert asking this very question. Should I buy a smart TV or not? Should I buy a separate box that can be replaced as technology improves, which seems more effective, cost effective, certainly, than replacing the TV? And I have to agree with her entirely. And this Roku stick is even better. It's not even a box.
If your TV – now, do all new TVs have MHL ports or
– No, not –
This is brand new.
This is pretty brand new. Yeah. It's on phones and portable devices more than it is currently on TVs. Although, as you say, your Onkyo has it. So it's starting to appear in the home-based home theater products.
I just got a new Panasonic Viera Plasma as well, a GT50.
The GT50, yeah. Nice.
And I don't think it has MHL either, and it's brand new.
I don't
new,
think so.
Which is disappointing.
Yeah, but if you can have a device that has an MHL port that's plugged into your home theater
that's
system,
the Onkyo. Yeah, yeah.
Then you're golden. You can just plug that thing in. I mean, you know, a separate box, a Roku box or a Boxy box or something
like
that.
That's fine, too. I mean, you got
to. It's not pretty big. Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, you got a cabinet and you've got, you know, all these things hooked up into your TV. So.
Or your Blu-ray player. You don't really even need a separate box.
Right.
Virtually all Blu-ray players these days have all sorts of streaming apps in them, including Netflix and Hulu Plus and so many others, that if you're going to have a Blu-ray player anyway. And most of them have these apps built in as well. You know, you don't really need a smart TV. On the other hand, of course, most TVs these days are TVs.
Smart.
They have these apps as well. So you have them in multiple places.
Well, that's true. And you may say, well, why spend $60 to $100 more for a Roku? Or an Apple TV for that matter. I just like the interface a little bit better.
Well, that is exactly right.
Yeah.
Even if you have streaming capabilities in multiple devices, the interfaces are going to be different and the specific apps are going to be different. So you might get an app on one device that you don't have on another, which is why I recommend if you're going to buy a new TV and a new Blu-ray player and they both have apps on them, don't necessarily get them from the same company. Get them from a different company because then you'll have a choice.
Right.
Often about which apps to use, which user interface you prefer. The only disadvantage there is that there may not be quite as tight an integration of operation between the two. If you get a Panasonic TV and Blu-ray player, one remote will easily operate both.
Unfortunately, you know, Samsung, LG, Panasonic, everybody's doing their own smart TV with their own interface. It's unique. And, of course, updating the TV is not going to be trivial. I wish, the thing I was hopeful for is Google TV, because what's the one thing that I really want, I think most people want, is the ability to say, okay, I want to watch Big Bang Theory. Where is it? Where can I watch it on broadcast? Where can I watch it on, TBS? Where can I watch it on demand? And have those choices. And so far, to my knowledge, the Google TV is the only device that currently offers search across, and it's Google, of course it does, across the board. And that's what I think we really want, you know. And because, for instance, sometimes it's free on Amazon if you have Prime, but you'd have to pay if you got it from Apple TV. I want to know, is there a free version I can watch? I've been bit. I bought a program on Apple TV that I then found out was on Netflix. And it's like, oh, don't. Well, you do that well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, we're in one of that crazy time when everybody's doing their own thing and there's no intercompatibility.
I know. And that's what Google TV was supposed to be in the beginning, and it really wasn't. No. And it still isn't, but it's getting better. One recent podcast, a couple weeks ago, I had Barb Gonzalez on, who's the streaming guru. She really knows her streaming very well. And we were talking a lot about Google TV. So, and I must admit, I have to go back and listen again to remember exactly what we were talking about because, you know, my brain's a FIFO buffer.
First in, first out.
And that was weeks ago. So that date is long gone. But yes, I agree with you entirely that we need some sort of unifying interface or structure wherein you can find whatever you want, wherever it's being broadcast or streamed or downloaded or whatever, and you can find out which ones are free. Of course, the content providers probably don't want you to find that out. They'd rather you find the one
that's
costs.
Part of the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
The
chat
room's pointing out there's an app called Fanhattan and a website, but that's not quite it. Yes, they allow the search at Fanhattan. On the app, it's on the iOS only, and the web is coming soon. But the problem, what I want is an interface to the TV, so then I click it
exactly,
and then it launches
exactly, and then there it is, right there.
Yeah.
Instead of having to look for it on one device and then go figure out how to get it on your
smart TV guide is basically what I want, right?
You know, the Holy Grail.
Yeah. What else are people asking you?
Well, let's see. I got somebody here asking. They have a Marantz. Let's see. This is Stanford, and he is asking about the Marantz SR7005 AV receiver, which has an Ethernet port, but he wants it to be wireless. So is there any way he can make it wireless? And the answer, as I'm sure you know, is yes, absolutely. All you need is an Ethernet to Wi-Fi bridge or adapter. IoGear makes them. Netgear makes them. You probably know a bunch of other companies that make them.
And they're not expensive, and that is a very handy thing to have. Scott Wilkinson, go to twit.tv/HTG for his podcast or hometheaterhifi.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We'll pass out on the couch. All right.
That's my song right there. You know, I was just thinking this morning, if sitting on the couch watching TV and eating potato chips were healthy, I would do that. So I was thinking, why do I exercise? Well, because it's healthy, but not because it's fun. But now if eating, I don't know why I was thinking that. I guess I didn't want to get up and go to the gym. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-827-5536. Mike in Orange County, you're next. Leo Laporte here.
Morning, Leo. How you doing?
I am well, Mike. How are you?
Not too bad. I just had a question for you about the Android 4.1 update for the Galaxy S3 in the U.S.
Jelly Bean!
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused at how this S3 seems to be the flagship device for...
I know. They rolled it out in Poland 2 weeks ago. Apparently it's coming out in areas, I think people in England have gotten it, but why the U.S. hasn't, I don't know. Jelly Bean is the latest version of Android, as you say, 4.1. And it is significantly, I have to say, because one of the reasons I went to the Galaxy Note 2 is because it comes with Jelly Bean. I have a Galaxy S3. And Jelly Bean is significantly improved, even over Ice Cream Sandwich, the 4.0. It's faster. It just feels better. I like some of the new features, like Google Now, which is a great little feature that will let you know about. For instance, I was they could tell that I was interested in the San Francisco Giants because I did some searches and so forth. So I've been getting the scores of the playoff games, which is great. Little things like that just automatically. So I don't, what Samsung is saying is we're pushing it out. Now, remember, the carriers have something to do with this as well. And it may not be Samsung's fault. It may be, so what happens is Google open sources the software, which they did a month or two ago. Then Samsung says, okay, let's look at it. How do we adapt it for our custom UI, TouchWiz? That takes a little more time. Then they test it. That takes a little. Now, okay, it's good. Now we're rolling it out. We'll roll it out in a small way to see if there's any big showstoppers, they call them. So they roll it out in Poland. And I haven't heard of any showstoppers. Then they do England. So I would expect it to be in the U.S. soon. I really would. Now, I got impatient. I rooted my Galaxy S3, and I put a mod on it, Cyanogen Mod 10, which is Jelly Bean. But the disadvantage of doing that is not everything works. There's driver issues. So, for instance, Wi-Fi wasn't very good. So I would wait. If you haven't rooted your phone, I would wait.
Why doesn't Apple have this problem?
Because, first of all, Apple doesn't update nearly as often, do they? Once a year. And I think when Apple went into the phone market, it had huge clout. And it still probably has huge clout. Carriers are willing to put up with this from Apple. But there may also be stuff we don't know about behind the scenes. For instance, it's my understanding that if it's a bug fix or a security fix, the carrier does not charge the handset manufacturer for the update. But if it's an update like this to a new operating system version, they charge Samsung back for the download. That's why Samsung sometimes doesn't do it over the air. They do it via keys. Their special, which is really stupid. The problem is we can't see into this black box that is the carrier operating system handset manufacturer triad. They all have competing interests. Google wants it to all be four. Oh, believe me, Google would like every handset that can do it to run 4.1. But they can't force that issue. So what happens is, at least we're getting the upgrade. I mean, there are plenty of phones out there that aren't even getting the upgrade. Nexus, by the way, which is Google's own version of the Android handset, just got it a few months ago. So it's not instant, even with Google. I share your frustration. As a Galaxy S3 owner, I finally gave up. Now... And I'm kind of happy to say that I've got, on the Note 2, I've got Jelly Bean. But, what's going to happen? There are only a handful of handsets that have Jelly Bean now. And the Google Nexus and newer stuff. So it just takes a little while. And I think it's got to be more than just what Samsung wants. I think it has to be what AT&T and Google want, too. They're all in this thing. I know. You're frustrated. I understand. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that Note 2. It seems like it's a great device, and some of the features I've been watching on YouTube are fantastic.
It's basically a Galaxy S3 with a bigger screen. I mean, that's pretty much what it is,
With the pen, too, right? It's got the S Pen.
I shouldn't ignore the stylus. The stylus turns out to be kind of useful. It's got a Wacom digitizer on here, so it's pressure sensitive. And it turns out to be, when you get this big, it's kind of cool. I'm not an artist, so I would imagine if somebody could draw, this would be really cool. But even handwriting notes are great. Mike, I'm glad you listened. Thanks for calling, and I just I sympathize, but I don't have a fix.
Thanks for letting me vent.
All right, a little venting.
Debbie in San Diego.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Debbie on the line from San Diego. Hi, Debbie.
Yeah. Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Oh, God.
I don't know, Debbie, but I just have this vision of you with your face in your hands, shaking your head. Oh, what's the matter?
What happened is I called you on my cell phone and I deactivated Bluetooth, and then when I came back out and turned the car on, got you back on Bluetooth, and so I'm echoing.
Yeah, I hear a little. Do you want me to put you on hold and you could figure it out and we'll get back to you?
I can't do it without the car off.
Oh.
Appeal.
You know, I did this yesterday, but not with Bluetooth, with the alarm system in the studio. I armed the alarm, and then I said, just I thought, oh, maybe somebody's, I said, hello, and Ryan said, oh, I'm here. I said, oh, no, and I tried to disarm it, couldn't. So Ryan and I said, well, let's go outside, and then it'll reset, and then we can disarm it. So we went outside. The alarm starts going off. It locks the door. I feel like it's Fort Knox. I'm standing outside. My key's not working. Nothing's working. And the alarm's going off. I know exactly how you feel. Then the SWAT team showed up. I hope the SWAT team doesn't show up for you. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to take a break for news anyway. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our friends at ShareFile.com. This is how I share my files, share my ads with Kyle and the radio stations along the way. We often have to send these ads, and I send them, you know, uncompressed WAV files. They're big files. I'm not going to email them. I did when I first started emailing, and then I started using like different consumer file sharing things. And it didn't work. The guy at KFI was deleting them, and that meant that Kyle couldn't get them. Things like that. It was just a mess. Fortunately, Citrix said, hey, we got this new product. Would you like to try it? I said, what is it? ShareFile. Yes. And now I'm a ShareFile fanatic. In fact, let me show you my ShareFile. I think I've showed you this before. But what's cool about it is it's customized for me. So it has our company logo. Now, you can have I don't use Outlook, but if you used Outlook, there's a plugin that makes it look just like email attachments, but it's not. There's no effective limit. I think it's 4 gigs or some huge limit to the file size. You can send massive files, no bounce backs, but even better, you have complete control of how the file is used. And I think that is huge. So let's just say I'm going to send this recording. These are the commercials in my share file folder, right? So let's say I want to send that. Now, they could just give me an email form, but I like to do this. I have a link. By the way, the link never changes, so I don't even have to email them the link anymore once I did this. And these are the settings. I do this to show you. Email when the item's been downloaded. I can say you have to enter your name and email. I can expire the download. Never or after a day. In fact, usually what I have it set for is a week. I don't want them to download it after the week has gone by, right? Because that's how many downloads can they do? And then we send files. Now, it's going to give me a link. Now, this link, they don't have to be a ShareFile user or anything. I'll go to it in my browser, and I'll show you what happens when they click the link in their email or they paste it. They actually just get a very simple, branded download link. This has worked so well, even with unsophisticated users, you know, in traffic departments all over the country. ShareFile.com. Whatever your industry, if you go to ShareFile.com, you'll see that they customize it for a variety of industries. It's HIPAA compliant, for instance, if you're in health care. It's all the government standards are adhered to. It uses encryption, etc., etc. When you start your free trial, if you would do me a favor, use TechGuy as the offer code, I would be very, very grateful. ShareFile.com, you get 30 days free, but just all I ask is you enter the offer code. It asks you later on, the offer code TechGuy. Actually, maybe, let me look at this. Yeah. You got to click that link at the top. I know you're listening to a podcast, but where it says radio listeners, would you click that? That way it speeds you right to this promo code TechGuy. And then choose the industry. You don't have to, but you could choose the industry. Then it'll be customized for the needs of that particular industry. And continue. ShareFile.com. The offer code is TechGuy. 30 days free. Really the best way to do this. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater, and giant Fablets. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. Outside the U.S., you can also Skype us. Just Skype out. 888-ASK-LEO. I don't know. Did we? I guess we lost our caller. What was her name? Cynthia?
Debbie.
I think we've lost her. But that's all right. That's all right. So, Debbie, call back when you figure it out. How the phone, actually, you know, just to finish that story, I locked myself out, set off the alarm. It's going, boop, boop, boop. What was weird, it really makes you think that burglar alarms are useless, because what was weird is, no, the police didn't show up, nor did Bay Alarm, the alarm company, call. Nothing happened. It just went boop, boop, boop for, you know, half an hour. So I called John, and our studio manager, and he drove down and unlocked it and turned it off. So nothing. So just why am I paying for a burglar alarm if nothing happens? But of course, if a mouse scurries through the studio at 2 a.m. and sets off the alarm, you can better believe the burglar alarm company wakes me up and makes me go down there. I've done that several times. Capiel, I think that's how you say it. Capiel in Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Here's my question. I have a YouTube channel, and I make videos literally on a full-time basis.
Wait a minute. This is your living?
Yeah. YouTube is my living.
That's fantastic. And are you able, I mean, you don't have to give me actual, you know, numbers, but you're able to make as much money as you would if you had a job?
Oh, yeah, if not more.
That's amazing. What kind of videos do you make?
It has really changed my life.
Holy
like, I
cow.
My passion of doing videos, and, you know, it's doing really well for me.
Well, let's plug your channel. It's youtube.com/...
KRS channel.
KRS?
Yeah, KRS channel.
Channel.
Yeah.
It's astronomy. Astrology.
Yeah. I teach Vedic astrology, like the ancient science of Vedic astrology, in a very fun way.
This is awesome. And you can make a living doing this. And you even have a very big watch.
Yeah.
That is one fancy watch, my friend. I can tell you're doing all right.
I'm kind of fanatic about watches, so I have all sorts of watches.
Me too. That's how come I noticed it right away.
Yeah.
So you call yourself the astrology Gandalf. I think that's so, look it. You've done so many smart things here. The marketing is great. I love the picture on the front of you eating grapes. It makes no sense, but it's great.
Yeah, exactly. Just a fun way to introduce this, you know, make astrology and get people to lose that ignorance about astrology, which it really is not. It is really an in-depth thing that people don't really look at. So I try to tell them, look, it's the ancient science of India, which is Vedic astrology. It's far more powerful than your sun sign, moon sign. So I try to tell them that in a very fun way. I do parodies with a celebrity horoscopes, and I'm about to do a Christian Bale horoscope with Batman. So it's just all fun stuff.
And this is critical too. You're using social media very effectively. You've got a Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, Google Plus.
Pinterest is very helpful. It has been surprisingly very helpful to me.
See, this is really intriguing. Boy, what a good example. Now, and the money you make comes from ads that YouTube places on here?
Yeah.
You're not charging or you know, just...
No, it's just YouTube, whatever they put on, you know, that's
how interesting.
It is absolutely has changed my life in the past 2 years.
Holy cow, I cannot believe. And you, now do you have a staff or is this just you or
No, just me, computer and
you
my
do
desk.
Have a PayPal donation button I notice on there. And Google allows you to do that, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. And so people can also give you more money if they really like what they're getting.
Exactly. For my research and, you know, for I have to travel and, you know, interview people. So
how much of your income comes from PayPal donations and how much from Google advertising.
Oh, no, PayPal donation is very little, literally like 4% of
yeah. You know what's funny? That's the same amount. that's so interesting you quote that number. That's what PBS reports about 4% of their audience donates. I think 4% is it's the same for us too. There's 4% of anybody will donate, and the rest just want to consume it for free. But that's the beauty of this. YouTube puts ads on here.
Exactly. So, you know, in a way, I'm giving them free information, but at the same time, I'm getting something out of it.
So what can I do to help you?
Yes. Okay, so here's my thing. I was, up to last week, I was shooting my videos with Nikon D90, which was really good in terms of the color depth of the image, but didn't have the audio, didn't have automatic lens focus, which the D5100 has. So I bought that this week, and I made several videos. And the thing is, the color depth that I was getting with the D90 video is not there. Like, the red is kind of looking like a pale red, not like that blood.
It's not saturated like you want it.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, is it the camera? Because I thought this was supposed to be a better camera than D90.
I don't think it's the camera. So it's probably settings. Now, the video that's on the front page, is that with the D9100?
No. That's with a D90.
You're driving in a car talking to a woman.
Some videos that I've done with inside my studio format, like I have my banner in the back. Yeah. If you look at my browse, if you browse my channel, it'll show you just like maybe 10 videos down. If you watch any videos after like the first 5 videos, you will see how the color saturation is versus the video that I've made this week.
Okay.
And you will see how the color of the red is really true red versus now the newer ones this week are kind of like this pale red. It's not
I got to tell you, red is very difficult anyway for video, for digital video, for actually video cameras of any kind. So unless you're really tied to the red, I might not use a saturated red. But I think also it's going to be lighting and it's going to be the settings in the camera. I would guess almost certainly that the camera is using a more accurate sensor, if not the same sensor, a more accurate sensor. It's not going to be less. It's not going to be less. So I would say adjust your settings on the camera, adjust your aperture, maybe go a half stop darker. And then I would perhaps, you can always, what are you editing them in?
I'm editing in Premiere CS3.
Okay. So you've got a high-end editor. You can get get plugins like Magic Bullet that will let you saturate better. You might want to do some post processing.
Didn't have to do any of this with the D90 videos. It was just like,
I understand. Yeah, and it's part of it's what you're used to. So it may be that you were used to a saturated red that was, believe it or not, less natural, and now it's more natural, and now you want it back the old way. But you can certainly fix it in post-production.
Okay.
You can saturate it more. You could change, one thing you might want to do, Bobomon's suggesting in the chat room, he's right, is change you're probably using an automatic white balance. So maybe change the white balance to a warmer white balance. That might give you.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take a look at the color space. If you had set it to a different color space earlier, you might want to check the settings in the old camera. Make sure that everything is the same.
Okay.
There are ways to fix this, and I think it's either in post-production or changing. I would play with the camera settings first, because why have to spend a lot of energy post-production? But I'm just
right, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just right. So impressed. So now, are you a YouTube partner? How do you?
Okay. Yeah. Partner for about a year now.
So you get more money as a YouTube partner than you would just as a regular publisher. Boy, I'm just impressed as hell. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech. Man, that's all I like to do. I just high tech all the time. I live this stuff. I breathe it. It's a good gig. Love it. Andrew in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andrew.
Hold on. Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
When I switched to DSL, I had heard that you should have a hardware fire. Get a router. It's a firewall.
Yeah. I generally with DSL like a router for two reasons. And often your DSL company gives you a DSL modem that is a router. Does the DSL modem have multiple connections in the back?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a router.
Oh.
So the reason they do that is because then, I don't know if you remember in the early days of DSL, you had to run some special software on your machine with a password and a login. If you put it in the router, and it will be in the router settings because you do need a password and a login for DSL, then it does it automatically. You don't have to think about it. And you get the benefit of a firewall. So all routers are firewalls, even if it doesn't say so in the box.
So here's my question, okay?
Yep.
I've had a router all these live long days, and so my router died. And so my question is it okay to just go to not have a router and just rely on like NOD32, and should I use the Windows firewall?
Okay, great questions. First of all, I think you do have a router. If your DSL modem merely connects to the wall where the phone jack is and then has a wire, single wire Ethernet wire coming out into your computer, then you would need a router. But if it has multiple Ethernet jacks on the back, three or four Ethernet jacks on the back, it is a router. And
yeah.
Most of the time they do that because they don't want to, they can dispense with special software on your PC. It doesn't matter anymore. So then you are getting all the benefits of a hardware firewall. What is a firewall? Firewall is and actually it's named after the walls that go in buildings between two separate rooms that fire can't go through, right? It's brick or metal. So it does the same thing for the internet. The internet, presuming the internet is a house of fire. It's dangerous out there on the internet. You don't want random people just wandering through your internal network. So the firewall is a barrier to them. It only allows certain kinds of traffic in and, by the way, out. That's what your router does. Even though it may not be billed as a firewall, a router is a dumb device. See, remember, the thing that's on the public internet is an attack surface. So you don't want to put a computer there because there's too many ways it can be attacked. A firewall's stupid. I mean, a router's stupid. It doesn't know much. It doesn't have all, you know, it's not running Windows. It's running some silly little operating system, the basic stuff. So when, for instance, an attacker comes to your router, in this case, your DSL modem slash router, and says, I would like to share files with you. Your router goes, I don't know what that is. What are you talking about? And ignores it, just drops the packet. So that's good news. It only, in fact, allows conversations that were initiated from within your network. So that gives you some significant protection. And in fact, I think everybody, even if they only have, you need a router because if you have multiple computers on a single internet connection. That's what a router is used for, to share the internet. But even if you only had one computer in your house, I would have a router. So if your router died and you didn't have a modem that allowed multiple computers on it, then I would say get a router. But you do, I think, have a router. Now, the next question is, should I run a software firewall? And yes, you should. The Windows firewall is fine. You don't need anything more than that. And why would you run that? I already have a firewall. Well, it's to protect you from anything that is inside your network. So let's say a friend comes over with his laptop, and it's just loaded with, you know, Trojan horses and viruses. Your friend likes to visit, you know, hacker.com. And his system is corrupt as heck. If he joins your network, all those little beasties on his computer are going to say, hey, we're on a network, everybody out! And they're going to try to get into your system. If you're running a Windows firewall, it blocks internal bad guys, somebody who comes over with a laptop. So that's very valuable, and I would leave it on. And the nice thing is, because it's the Windows firewall, it doesn't slow you down much. It's built into the operating system. It's very simple. The Windows firewall is not a very good firewall. For instance, it doesn't in any way block outbound traffic. But it is on by default in all modern versions of Windows. That was a huge change Microsoft made way back with Service Pack 2 on Windows XP. And instantly, just the fact that it turned the firewall on by default changed the security landscape dramatically. That single move by Microsoft, turning on the firewall by default, calmed things down immensely. So I do think you should leave it on if it's on. It doesn't, you know, it's not as powerful as a hardware firewall because it's on your computer and, you know, your computer has other vulnerabilities. So it's nice to have the hardware firewall and then a software firewall on, and then I think you're pretty good. But ultimately, nothing is going to overcome your bad behavior. So you, the most important thing, you know, security software is great, firewalls are great, but the most important thing is for you to be smart about what you do. For instance, if you get one of those phony calls that says, you know, they're from Microsoft, they say, I'm from Windows, and you have a problem, let us install some software on your system, and you say, yeah, sure, that sounds good. That's a bad guy who's just talked you into bypassing all your security and putting something on your system. So, you know, if you go to a website and it gives you a pop-up saying, hey, I see you have viruses. Why don't you install this software? And you go ahead. You've just bypassed every form of security you put on there. You can't get around your own bad behavior. Even if you have a hardware firewall, a software firewall, ESET and all that stuff, doesn't matter. So but just be, you know, just be a little bit smart about that. Now, I think we got Debbie back. Let me go to Debbie, see if the echo is all better. Hi, Debbie.
Hello, Debbie.
Okay. I guess we could listen in. Debbie, are you there? All right. I don't want to listen into her personal conversations. You ever do that? What do they call it? A butt dial, right? It happens all the time. The last call you made on your cell phone, for some reason, you know, it's still on there. And for some reason, you're sitting on your phone and the screen comes on. And it dials that number. I get a butt dial last night. And it's very tempting, isn't it, to just listen and see what's going on, but I don't. I'm not that kind of guy. Now, by the way, 40 seconds have passed and Debbie's picked up the phone saying, what? August in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, August.
Hello, Leo.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I have bought a used Dell Studio 1569, and I absolutely love it. Worked great for a while, but now I think I did a Windows update, and the machine will not shut down, and it will not restart.
It works, but you just can't shut it down and restart it.
Yes, exactly. I went back and tried to look for to like roll it back to a restore point.
Yeah.
And all my restore points are gone.
Uh-oh, that's a bad sign. It's Windows XP, I'm almost sure of it. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by our phone system. I'm not kidding. I love our phone system. You've heard me talk about Ring Central. So when we built the studio, and by the way, this studio, it's just been so great. We just love it. We've been here more than a year now. But one of the things when, you know, I'm a small businessman, and I got to run a business. And, I never really thought about this when we were in the cottage because it just kind of happened. Everybody was using their cell phone, and now I realize. In fact, in the cottage, we had one phone line and cordless phones, and that was it. And a number. And the phone rang, and whoever was near a phone picked it up and said, yeah, hell, what is it? Well, we're a little bit bigger now. We got 25 employees, probably more than that. I haven't counted lately. We got a big studio. People, producers are making calls. We're making sales calls, business calls, production calls. We need a phone system. And I thought, I don't want to deal with this. So fortunately, I have a very good IT guy, Russell Tammany, Exponentia Systems. Recommend him. And I said, he said, you know, I've installed Ring Central on a bunch of my clients and they like it. Would you like to? I said, well, how does it work? He says, it's cloud-based. There's no PBX. I remember the PBX from the old days and I didn't want to program it and all that. He said, no, it's all digital. I said, that's good. I like that. It's all cloud-based, but it has all the features. In fact, it's more feature-rich than a PBX system. For instance, you can receive faxes, and the faxes come as email in your inboxes to whoever it's addressed to. There's cell phone software for Ring Central on Android and iOS, so that means our staff puts it on their phone. They make calls, it bills to us, and it shows up as our business number when they're making those calls from anywhere. You can have their extension ring their cell phone. Voicemails go in the inbox and the email. I mean, just on and on. It's all the modern stuff that you want. But you still get, I'm going to reach over and get it, you still get a desk phone. Just a normal, you know, a phone, a real phone that acts just like a real phone. And there's a phone tree. And you can call our 800 number, 800-605-TWIT, and you'll get the Ring Central system. You get the whole Ring, you know, you get the TWIT music, and it's great. It's all, and I do it all online. So I want you to try it for 30 days. $20 per user per month. There are no startup fees. The phones, even, they've got a great deal just for our listeners on the podcast. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So you can call 800-543-9980. Just checking the music. 800-543-9980. Or go to ringcentral.com and use a promo code TWIT. If you're setting up an office or you're tired of the PBX in the basement, you want to do something modern, ringcentral.com, offer code TWIT, or call 800-543-9980. They'll give you a 30-day free trial. No risk, free trial. We love it. We love our Ring Central phone system. So our caller before the break gave me some symptoms that I don't like. One cotton picking bit. So he has, I'm almost positive, Windows XP. He installed a hotfix. All of a sudden, he can't shut down his computer. And when he looks, and this is the giveaway, when he looks at System Restore, there are no restore points left. Now, it is possible. It is possible that something very strange happened. His hard drive maybe started to die and things started disappearing. But it's far more likely that he's got a bad guy on his system. And the reason I say that is one of the first things bad guys do is they delete restore points so that he can't. That you can't go back and get rid of him. Now, thank you, Web4496, who's giving me a link to a page that you should certainly know about. How do I reset Windows Update? That's actually not the problem here, but this is a good thing to know about. It's an automated fix-it that lets you get your Windows Update going again. And it might be worth a try. The problem is not so much his Windows Update. His computer will not turn off. And his computer will not shut down. By the way, why would a bad guy want that? Well, maybe he's using your computer to send spam. Maybe he's using your computer to attack other computers. He doesn't want you to turn it off. And you know what would happen? Oh. Do not disturb on my phone. I picked up my phone and now it's ringing. You know what? You know what would what the guy would like is for most, and this is what most people will do. They'll go, oh, can't turn it off. Okay, well, at least it works. And they'd keep using it for months while he keeps using it behind your back for months, attacking other computers. So I think it's highly likely that your computer has been corrupted by a bad guy. You've got a Trojan horse on there or a malware of some kind. And those are two good, very good examples. Very good examples of what bad guys would do to your system. I can't promise that's what's wrong, but I suspect that's what's wrong. So what you need to do now is fix it. And in my opinion, the only sensible way to do this is to start over. So I hope you have your Windows Restore disks, your system recovery disks. They either came with a computer or you were supposed to make them when you got the computer. And, of course, nobody ever does that. But I hope you did that. And if you did, then run them and wipe the computer. Start over. You want to back up your data first since it's running. That's good. You can. Just your data. Make sure all your documents, things you don't want to lose, email, whatever. But you got to wipe that. You got to start over. Wipe the computer. Reinstall Windows. If you've got the recovery disk, that's the best way to do it. It'll get you back to the day the computer came home. Then, next thing, very important, next thing you want to do is run Windows, get online, obviously, but then run Windows Update until there is nothing more, no more critical updates. You just run it and run it and run it till you can't update anymore. Why you do that? Well, because until you do that, it's not safe. Every one of those updates, those critical updates, is patching a security vulnerability. Probably one that, maybe one that was used to attack your computer. So you got to do that. Then you can start using the computer. Reinstall your applications. I do it slowly. You don't need probably half the ones you had installed. You'll notice one thing right away. Your computer's faster and more reliable. Restore your data. And then don't do whatever it is you did again. Chris in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something that I found in the App Store. It's an amazing find. It's called Voice Camera Pro. And what it does is it allows you to control the camera with your voice. It's simply amazing.
This is an iOS program?
Right. It's in the App Store. It's an application. So if anyone out there has a disability or they want to control the camera, they can now do it with their voice. And it works beautifully. You can instantly upload it to Facebook or Twitter or whatever you want. It's absolutely amazing.
This is cool. $299, iPhone or any iOS device with a camera, obviously, which would be the newer iPads or an iPod Touch. You could say 1, 2, 3, 4, and then take the picture, which is good because that's what you're saying anyway, right? To smile, cheese. Can you program the the commands, or does it have?
Right, yeah, and you can program your own commands, so you can actually have it work
cheese.
With whatever word you want to say.
Right. This
yeah,
is good. So the built-in commands, camera launches the camera. So you use Siri to do this? Do you have to start Siri?
No, you don't have to start Siri. You just launch the application, and it's good to go.
Wow. Really neat. One takes a photo. Two takes two photos. Three takes three photos. Four takes four photos. You could switch cameras, turn the flash on or off. Wow, this is great. Great tip. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo. Have a good one.
All right, Chris, you too. $299 on the App Store. Voice Camera Pro by The Sanctuary. Neat idea. Kathy called us last Sunday. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, how are you?
You were the remind me, but I think you were the one that Verizon cut your fiber. You cut your copper.
Right. Well, they keep sending me letters saying that I need to upgrade from copper to fiber optic, and I guess the ultimate question is that what they intend to do with everybody?
No, because they just want you to do. Do those letters say you should, we'd love it, or do they say you must?
They claim that I, quote, need to because of how my line is old and needs to be upgraded.
Yeah, it would sure be nice if you would. So understand that what Verizon has done, and by the way, they're not doing it anymore. It was very expensive. I think it was $5,000 per customer. Is that they put fiber optic cables in your neighborhood. And the only way that they can recoup the expense of putting fiber optics down your street is if you switch over. So you're like the person, you know, when they're building the skyscraper and there's one little house that won't sell their land? That's you.
Uh-oh.
Nothing wrong. No! No, you don't. You can ignore those letters if you want. Do whatever you want. Now, I personally think they're probably right. You might like fiber better. I mean, it's faster internet. It might be more reliable.
Yeah, well, I'm just using it for just the landline.
Well, that's the thing. I don't like the strong arm tactics. Would it cost you more for fiber?
They claim no, that I could just keep it at the regular what I have going now, which is an expensive package. I have the like Freedom package and all, but the thing is, I just don't like the idea of once they do that they're going to put me on battery, and I got different stories on that, and that's what made me nervous.
Oh, see, now this is interesting. So now, one of the things that
you'll get triple A batteries, that and then a friend who's got it said no, you have to get them to come out and replace.
They put a big lithium ion battery in there. So let me explain what happened. See, when we designed the long distance and the phone system in the United States, originally, of course, it was private industry, still was, you know, it was Ma Bell, but the government heavily regulated it, and for reasons of national security and safety of the customers, they did some really good things. For instance, your phone, your old copper phone, works without power. Now, it doesn't work if you have a cordless phone or whatever, but if you just have a plain old phone that plugs into the wall and not into a power socket, that'll work even in a blackout because the power comes from the phone company. That was intentional. That's not an accident. That was intentional so that customers, even in a disaster, would still have access to their phone service. And that phone service was built very robustly so it would survive earthquakes, floods, and so forth. Now what Verizon wants to do is take all that antiquated old copper out of the ground and replace you with internet service. We'll talk about that in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
The TV game.
Oh, no! Is it a four-hour TV show? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. So we're talking to Kathy. Poor Kathy. So she has regular copper phone service. She does not have internet. Verizon keeps sending her letters saying, you know that copper, it's rusting away in the ground. You really should switch to Fios, which is their new fiber service. Now, it doesn't cost any more, but it has one little disadvantage, and that's what I was talking about. Because we designed our phone system for emergencies, for crisis, because we understood that that was what a phone system was for, it works even when the power's out and the internet's out. Will your Fios work when the power's out? No. Well, it's battery backed up, but the battery lasts only a few hours. Will it work when the internet's out? No. So, in fact, you're right, Kathy, to be a little concerned. It's going to be fine phone service. It's going to cost you the same, but they do put a lithium-ion battery in your garage where it's hooked up that will keep the phone service going in case of an outage. Not forever, just for a few hours. And yes, if the internet goes out regionally or, you know, in that area, so is your phone service. So just ignore those annoying letters. They want you to move to Fios because they want to get rid of the copper. They would cut the copper, by the way. There's another reason I think that Verizon wants you to cut the copper. You currently could go to DSL Extreme or some other internet service provider over your copper. They don't have that same obligation over Fios. So it's a way of them essentially sealing their monopoly. We got to fight the fight on these. These guys are unregulated at this point. The Congress doesn't care. They get more, believe me, they get so much, so many campaign donations from Verizon, very active, all the telcos are, that they regulate in their favor, not ours. Your local public utilities commission, they care, but they're limited in what they can do. They don't have much enforcement capability. Budgets are tight. We got to fight the fight ourselves. I was telling the story in the break to the chat room about my run-in with Comcast. These companies are monopolies, so they don't care about customer service. They pretend to. You know, I tweeted something negative about Comcast, so I got a call from the Comcast executive offices. But, you know, I really got the feeling she was more mad at me. You know, what I would expect, and I'm sure what they normally would do is, oh, we're so sorry you're having trouble. What can we do to make it better? We'd love to help you. And when Frank Eliason was working at Comcast, he was the guy who created Comcast's kind of Twitter response team. That's really what they did. They took care of people. More, I get the sense from her, hey, what are you complaining about? Get off of the Twitter. Don't Twitter about us. It's like, we would really appreciate it if you would stop tweeting about us. So she explained some stuff to me, which was wrong. Like she said, oh, yeah, we don't use HDMI cable boxes. We're mostly component. What? This is 2012. And by the way, I've had HDMI cable boxes from Comcast for years. The other thing that was a problem is they changed my appointment because I wanted two DVRs. Then the guy shows up with one DVR and it's component only. And they didn't recognize the HDMI box they told me to bring to the new place. And now I got a call from Comcast saying, hey, you've got our box. Wait a minute, you didn't recognize? No, we want it back, or we're going to charge you on Monday. These companies, Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, they may not technically be monopolies anymore, but they haven't figured that part out yet. And I tell you, even my cable installer said, yeah, I'm the most hated guy. By the way, he does not work. Comcast does not use, at least in my area, their own employees. They contract this out. This poor guy, I feel sorry for him. He's got to deal with them too. 8888 Ask Leo, what can we do? You know, what can we do? There seems like there's got to be a better way. What was it Lily Tomlin used to say? We don't care. We don't have to. We're the phone company. That was 40 years ago, and it hasn't gotten any better. Unbelievable. I asked the cable star. I said, "Well, so they don't recognize this box? No, it's not on your account. Oh, so I could just keep this DVR forever? Not that I want it. Well, I don't know. That's between you and them. Well, they don't recognize it. It's not on my account. Oh, I guess it is because they call me then the next day saying, "Where's our box?" But if you really want some customer support, my recommendation: tweet it. Apparently, they pay attention to Twitter for some reason I just don't understand. They don't want a black spot in their Twitter. I loved it when my Comcast cable installer... Don't you love it that Comcast changed the name to Xfinity because they realized people hated Comcast so much? Oh, no, it's not. I'm Xfinity now. Not fooling me. He said, oh, it's okay. You're going to have Charter soon, too. So, I don't think Charter's... I don't think anybody's any better. They're all terrible. Christy, Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I actually have an Acer Aspire. It's a 7560, and it's an AMD quad-core processor. I wanted to know, I had some McAfee, you know, it was preloaded with McAfee.
Yeah, everybody gets McAfee because all the companies get a deal. You know, McAfee pays Dell and HP and everybody like $20, and then they put it on your computer. But it's a terrible antivirus. Don't use it.
Right. So now, it expired. So I'm looking to get a new one. And I wanted to know, once I get a new one, do I have to, like, deinstall that other program?
Yes.
Or how do I go about doing that?
You can only run one antivirus at a time. This is, you know, this is one of the problems I have with computer companies is they load these... And they make money, right? They load these computers up. Microsoft doesn't like this either, by the way. Microsoft has a program called Microsoft Signature Computers. You pay more for them because there's no junk on them. And by the way, nobody makes them because they want them. They make a lot of money. They charge, you know, whatever, $5, $10, $20 to each of these companies. They load your computer up. So, yes, there are better antiviruses. One of our sponsors, ESET, makes a better one. Even Microsoft's free one. Microsoft Security Essentials is better, and that's available at Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. So I would recommend if one of the problems I have, by the way, with this is you only get a few months of McAfee, whatever, 6 months. And then if you want to more, you pay for it. Most people probably just sit there and don't update it, and they think they've got an antivirus, but really they don't because it's not updated. So don't do that. Uninstall McAfee. If you don't want to spend any money, Microsoft Security Essentials, that updates automatically. If you're willing to spend a little money for, I think, a better program, Nod 32 from ESET is a better program. Just uninstall it. Just get rid of it.
Now, what will be the difference between an antivirus suite and an antivirus program?
The suite costs more.
Okay.
Don't get the suite. Get the... Now, ESET's not going to like me because everybody sells a suite, which, you know, got a lot of extra doohickeys. You don't need that. Get just the antivirus.
Now, and I frequently use, like, hotspots, like at Starbucks. Would this be sufficient for that?
Yeah. Now, really, the hotspot isn't more prone to viruses. There are other issues with hotspots. People can snoop on you, for instance.
Okay.
That's a different thing entirely. You know what? When I have to take a break for news, Christy. I'm going to hang up on you, but keep listening. When we come back, I will talk about, because this is a much more involved problem, how to protect yourself at a public place. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I'll tell you one way I raise funds, Gazelle.com. You know about Gazelle.com? Gazelle is a way that you can sell your old gadgets and get new gadgets... easily, simply, GAZELLE.com. So what do you want a Galaxy Note, right? I know you do now that I've talked about it. You want to get rid of that iPhone 4S, buy something. Is it AT&T? Let's say AT&T. It's a 32 gig, $205. Awesome. Put that in the box. Actually, you know what? I wanted to sell my Galaxy S3 here. Let's see what that's worth. It's a factory unlocked because I bought it overseas. I spent a lot of money. Oh, wait a minute, my note, too. So let's sell the note. It's in good condition. No water damage. What's that? Whoa, 262. So now I'm 462. I might be able to pay for. And then I'm going to sell the Samsung Galaxy, also unlocked, S3. It's white, 16 gigs. Good condition. Next, free of water damage. Who's doing the math? I think I have enough. That's more than enough to pay for my Note 2. So this is how it works. Now, these quotes are good for 30 days, which is really handy. That means that if you haven't yet decided to buy, get the quote now because it's only going to go down in value, I got to tell you. 1 million gadgets traded. Gazelle has paid out almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers. That's how good this is. Whatever is gathering dust, your Apple TV, your Apple monitor, MacBook, iMac, iPod, iPad, cell phone, iPhone, don't let it gather dust. Get some money for it. Go to Gazelle. They'll send you a check, PayPal. My recommendation, they'll get that Amazon gift card because they bump it 5%. They give you back the, they rebate the Amazon affiliate fee. Don't sit on it. Keep it moving. Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. By the way, they pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck, so you don't even have to pay for the shipping. Just throw it all in a box, and they'll ship it to you. Gazelle.com. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Our website is techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there to the chat room, show notes for this show and the previous 916 Tech Guy shows. Are everything you need to know. It's all there, techguylabs.com. Before the break, and I wanted to have enough time to really do this right. We had a caller who said she spent a lot of time at Starbucks online and was wondering if her antivirus was sufficient to protect her, and it's not. You should be aware of the fact that there are potential problems when you are on a shared network. When you're on a Wi-Fi hotspot, or you're traveling and you've plugged into the network, even if it's hardwired at the hotel, you're on a shared network. One of the things that's fun to do if you're in a hotel and you plug into the Ethernet is just browse the network and see who else, what other computers you can see. You can usually see dozens of other computers. If you've got a Macintosh, you can often see other people's music collections broadcasting over the hotel's network. I've even been able to play music. Now, I haven't gone any farther because I don't want to hack their computers, but if you can play a song from somebody's computer over a hotel network, it's likely you'd also be able to get into that computer and start looking at some files. So you got to be a little bit careful. You're on a shared network. So there's one more thing. If you're on a wireless network, you're broadcasting whenever you're visiting a website or sending email or whatever. You're actually, all that data is floating through the air. And a bad guy with sufficient sophistication might be able to capture it, snoop on it. Here's the worst case scenario, in my opinion. You use an email service, and there's still many out there, that doesn't encrypt the password when you log in. Your computer logs in automatically. You're not even entering the password. But it just logs you into your email, right? Every 10 minutes, right? Doesn't your computer get the email every few minutes? You go to your email program, it's already there. Well, in order to do that, it's sending out the login and the password. And if you're using, for instance, your internet service provider's email, in many cases, if it's not a great ISP, that's not protected. Some online email services don't use HTTPS, secure HTTP. So in those cases, your email login and password just floating through the air. I'll never forget, I was on a cruise ship a few years ago. One of these geek cruises that I do, I'm doing another one next month, every year. And, there's a guy who goes on these cruises all the time. Nice guy, friend of mine named Randall. He's kind of a hacker guy. And he sidles up to me on the first day of the cruise with a piece of paper and he gives it to me. And he says, "Is this your password?" And I open it up and there's my email password. I said, "What the heck?" He said, "You know, you're broadcasting that throughout the entire ship." I had a little talk with Randall. I explained he probably should tell people at the meet and greet at the beginning of the cruise instead of sidling up to them with their passwords. It'd be better just to say, "Hey, by the way," you might want to be careful. So fortunately, if you use Gmail or some more modern system nowadays, they use encryption and you're safe. But this is the worst case scenario. Not that they're watching where you're surfing, but that they catch your email password. And you didn't know it. When's the last time you changed your email password? Never. So if somebody got it 2 years ago, they could have been reading your email all this time. Now, you might say, "Well, that's okay. There's nothing in my email." Yeah, well, they could also be changing passwords. How do you? Where does your password recovery go? Does it go to your email? So that is the worst case scenario. You could, if a guy really were a bad guy and he got your email, password, and login, you're kind of not in great shape. So my suggestion is to check with your ISP or use Gmail, Google's mail service, or another. I think Yahoo Mail now offers it. So does Outlook.com. Make sure you're using secure logins. You can use, you know, if you're buying something on Amazon, that's going to be secure. The credit card number is going to travel securely. That's protected. Your bank is doing it. If you're just surfing to regular sites, you know, reading the Washington Post, they can see what you're doing. But I don't know if that matters. Keep in mind that when you're on a public access spot or you're in a hotel, if you travel, that anybody on the same network as you or anybody with sufficient interest couldn't capture your transmissions over Wi-Fi or over the Ethernet and look at what you're doing. So just keep that in mind when you visit. You know, who cares if they know that you're reading the New York Times? But I would be very careful if your email program, for instance, is not sending the passwords encrypted. Now, if you are really seriously curious about this or concerned about your security, you can protect everything you do using something called a VPN, a virtual private network. And there are third-party solutions for this that will, for a small fee, a small monthly fee, let you use their service. And what happens as a result is nobody can see anything that you're doing. And that works. That works pretty well. I'll give you a list. Probably somebody in the chat room has some recommendations for VPNs you can use. I also have a little box that I bought for $99. Gave me a year's service with one of the VPN services. That VPN then means that when I use that box anywhere, I'm always secure. There's ways to do this if you really need to be secure. OpenVPN, the company OpenVPN, actually runs one called PublicVPN. That does a very nice job. PublicVPN.com. They don't charge you. Well, I guess they do charge you. They charge you $6.95 a month or $70 a year. There are many of them like this. And I don't think you need one. But if you don't use one, you should be very aware of what you're sending, whether it's encrypted, and understand that anything that's not encrypted is visible to anybody. There was a program called FireSheep that was put out last year. It was a plugin for Mozilla, the Mozilla browser. Let me see if it's still out there. It came out 2 years ago now. And FireSheep was kind of amazing. FireSheep, you'd go into a Starbucks with FireSheep running, and you could see all the people who were on Facebook, Twitter, Google, Flickr. And until the days of HTTPS, you could log in as them. Just post something on their Facebook feed, just for fun. That's a little scary. FireSheep is free and widely downloaded. I think millions of copies have been downloaded. 2.3 million copies have been downloaded. That means there's several million people out there who could do this. My friend Steve Gibson, who's a security guru, was thrilled. I said, Steve, this is horrible. Why are you thrilled? He said, because this will make companies like Facebook, Twitter, and Google encrypt their traffic, protect you. And in fact, that's what happened. Less than a year later, Facebook started offering HTTPS encrypted attachment, you know, connection to Facebook. Use that if you can. It's in your settings. Same thing with Google. Same thing with Gmail. Then you don't have to worry. Hotmail, now HTTPS. Outlook.com, now HTTPS. And a lot of it because of FireSheep, because the guy showed how easy it is to steal this stuff. And, you know, as long as we're talking about this, if you haven't been doing that all along, maybe now would be a good time to change your email password. Just, you know, knock that guy off of there. He's been using your email for 2 years. Maybe time just to start over. Change your password every once in a while. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. We're toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. You can also visit us in the chat room. Always fun in there. Quite a few people. I'm almost 1,000 people in there. You'll find the link to the chat room and the show notes and all that at techguylabs.com. techguylabs.com. That's our new website. I hope you like it. By the way, if you comment on there, I'd really, you know, add your, if you hear me say something, you say, I want to add something to that, use the website. Great place to add your comments. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Those private eyes are watching you.
Chatroom referred me to an article in USA Today about protecting yourself online. Not the best advice I've ever read, but one of the things they mention in there, which is bizarre, they don't mention VPNs, which is the way to protect yourself online. I think they confuse it in USA Today with a proxy server, which is really a very limited use privacy or security-wise. What a proxy server does is it gives you a different internet address when you're surfing, and it's used primarily by people to trick, like, let's say you're in the U.S. and you want to watch the BBC. BBC is blocked to anybody except UK users because they are the ones who pay for it. So you might use a proxy server to trick the BBC into thinking you're in the UK. Doesn't provide any security. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. So it's unfortunate because this is a big newspaper. A lot of people will read this article, and perhaps a handful of them will try to use a proxy server thinking it's giving them some value, and it's not. So it's kind of unfortunate. That's why you got to listen to this show, I guess. It's too bad. Jerry in Lancaster, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Jerry.
Hi, how are you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'm in the market for a tablet. I've just been starting to look around, and I'm just overwhelmed.
Yeah, there's a lot of them now. Are you looking for an Android tablet or an iPad, or do you care?
I don't care. I happened to be looking at some iPads last night, and they were nice, but they were kind of pricey starting at $500.
Yeah, I mean, you can get, it really does depend on what you want to do. You can get one of my favorite tablets. It's a 7-inch tablet from Google itself. It's made by Asus. It's called the Google Nexus 7. You can buy it at play.google.com for $200, $250 if you want a larger memory footprint. I don't think you need it. And it's a very nice tablet, $200. However, if you want more capability, more speed, more storage, you can easily spend a lot more. I think the iPad is the champagne of tablets. I don't know.
Right.
Champagne priced, but also a huge store of very useful applications. It's very elegant. It's well designed. It's well supported. But and so for a long time, it was really the iPad was it. I wasn't recommending an Android tablet. We are now seeing Android tablets that are very, very nicely done.
Yeah, the resolution was wonderful. The speed seemed to be good.
Yeah, it's the fastest tablet out there.
Yeah, I thought it was a little pricey.
Any really high-end tablet is going to be that expensive. Asus makes something called the Transformer Prime, which I really like. It has a nice feature. You can buy an optional keyboard that it slots into, and it turns it into a laptop, which is kind of neat. But it's going to cost you, $500. It's right in there with the iPad. And if you're going to spend that much, I would get an iPad, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, stay tuned, because we are waiting for an announcement from Apple. We thought we'd have an invitation by this week. They did not send them out. John Pachowski, writing in All Things D, he seems to have the best connection, or one of the best connections to Apple, said, no, it's going to be October 24th or the 23rd. So that's when Apple is going to announce, he believes, and I think he's right, everybody seems to agree, a new lower-cost iPad. I doubt Apple will call it the iPad Mini, but that's what we've all been calling it. It will be probably the equivalent of an iPad 2 in performance and screen in a 7.85-inch tablet. So smaller, which I like. I like the smaller tablet. You can pocket it. You can take it with you. This Asus, Google Nexus 7 that I recommended, it's 7 inches, even smaller. But what we don't know is how much lower cost. Apple's not notorious for cheap. In fact, I don't think you could ever call anything Apple did cheap or inexpensive. I would guess that it's going to be $300, $350 for this iPad mini. But that's less than $500. Wi-Fi only, they seem to agree, Wi-Fi only. Because it is identical in screen resolution and power to an iPad 2, it will run most of the apps that are out there for the iPad. That's good. But we don't know because Apple hasn't announced it yet. So watch, if you can hold off till October 23rd, 10 days, I would, because I think that there will be another choice in the market. And some are saying this may be better than the big iPad. I don't know. I'm not sure. Oh, and by the way, October 26th, Microsoft starts shipping Surface tablets. These are the tablets based on the new Windows RT operating system. These are interesting. I wouldn't hold my breath for those because it's a brand new operating system. That means there will be very few applications available for it. It won't be particularly useful initially out of the box. So I wouldn't be the first to get a Surface. But I will. But I shouldn't say I wouldn't be, because I will. I'll run right out. But that's my job. I'm not sure I would say recommend that yet. Wait 6 months. We'll have a better idea of whether the Surface is going to take off or be, at one with some of the tablets that have fallen by the wayside. BlackBerry, remember, made the Playbook? Dead. The Motorola Zoom. There were lots of bad tablets trying to copy the iPad. And the Surface is really a big unknown right now. So if you're going to get a tablet, I would say the Nexus. If price is a real issue, the 7-inch Nexus 7 is great. I love it. Great for surfing, email, applications, games. Really nicely done. If you want the champagne, the caviar, the top of the line, the iPad is great, but it is pricey. And I would also wait to see what Apple does with the iPad mini. And if you're a Windows fan, if you love Windows, if you've looked at Windows 8 and say, boy, this is great, because that's what the RT tablet basically is, Windows 8. If you like that, then maybe you'd kind of want to watch and wait and see. If you asked me today, I would probably get the Nexus 7, given the price. Amazon Kindle HD is interesting if you're an Amazon fanatic, like you use Amazon and that's it. I love Amazon. But it's not cheaper. It's only a little bit cheaper. And it's much less powerful. Much less powerful. I like the Nexus 7 from Google, actually. So that's kind of my recommendation. If price is a big object, that's a good choice. Bob in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bob.
Hello. Hey, I'm in outside sales, and my Android is kind of at the end of its life. I need to get a new phone, and I've decided that I want to get a tablet also. It seems to me that a lot of the functions on a tablet and a phone are redundant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, basically, Android tablets are exactly the same as Android phones, just bigger.
Right, and so it kind of seems to me what I want a tablet for is so that I can, you know, be in a customer's office and be able to, you know.
Hang on, we got to take a break, but I got a surprise for you. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, spinning the platters today. And he makes a playlist available after the fact on his Google Plus account, KYLE/BENHAM. But we also put it at the end of the show notes on every show on our website, techguylabs.com. Kyle, you got to work in some Madonna music over the next day or so, because I'm going to see Madonna in Denver Thursday night. So I want to get in the mood. So just a musical note, musical director. James in New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm well, James. How are you?
Okay, I have a Dell Inspiron. I'm coming up with an Era 59 5B. I bought it without a hard drive. I got it from like a military sale, and I put it in a hard drive, and it's telling me that I have a password authentication problem. It has a serial number, then 59 5B.
There's a risk buying a computer from a military sale. They may have locked this sucker down. So the password, there's several places you can put a password in a computer. And since the hard drive isn't in it, or wasn't in it, it's not the hard drive. You know, you could put a password on Windows and so forth. They've got a password in the BIOS. There, you can either lock the BIOS so that nobody could change the settings, or you could set a BIOS-level password so that at hardware level, somebody can't turn the computer on. Given that it's a military computer, that does not surprise me. That does not surprise me. So I guess one possibility is to use the pull out the battery out of the backs up your BIOS. Look for a lithium battery the size of a quarter, silver battery. Pop it out, and then you're going to have to do some research on the web on that particular motherboard. Find out what that motherboard is in that computer, and you'll probably have to set some jumpers to clear the BIOS settings. I do not know if that'll fix it. If it's real security, and given the military owned that computer, I would guess it is. It may not be anything you can do anything about. You may be out of luck. I forgot I was going to talk about an alternative to our caller, who is in outside sales, and he's trying to decide. He thinks he wants a phone and a tablet because he wants to have something that he can do presentations for in sales. Now, the answer that may surprise you is this new phone from Samsung that I was talking about at the beginning of the show. It just came out. It'll be available, I believe, on Verizon and AT&T and maybe Sprint too. It's called the Galaxy Note 2. And it is the largest screen smartphone out there right now, 5.5 inches. It's big. But it's not, I don't think it's big enough to do presentations. When you say presentations, you know, that seems to me like you need something a little bit bigger. You certainly could hook this up to a projector and do a presentation on the screen. There was ways to do that with the USB cable. This is, I think it supports MHL, which means you could do micro HDMI out of it. Hook that up to a projector. That may be more complicated than you want. There are specialized phones that have Pico projectors built in. They're not very nice. They're kind of uncomfortable because they have a big bulge where the projector. I've seen these every year at the Consumer Electronics Show. And you just, you know, you have a PowerPoint presentation on the phone and you project it against the wall. Both of those are kind of ungainly. In my opinion, your best bet is to get a tablet and get a phone. That, I think, was your initial instinct. A nicer tablet, like an iPad, get the $500 base iPad. It's going to give you so much nicer presentations. They're going to look so much better. And this is your bread and butter. And then you can carry a regular phone around. Combining the two is a little tricky. Not probably ideal. But an iPad looks good. It's slick. You can get a nice little case for it. And it would be a very nice presentation tool. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. Neil is in Arizona, our next caller. Hi, Neil.
Hi. Is this the Leo Laporte Show?
This is the Leo Laporte Show. Is this Neil?
I'm sorry. No, this is Brandy.
Oh, hi, Brandy. I picked up the wrong line. Go ahead. You get to ask your question, and I'll get to Neil after that.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, my husband got the SOPA virus on our laptop. Do you know, is there a way to remove that?
What's the name of the virus? The SOPA virus?
Yeah, SOPA. It says that your computer has been locked and you have to pay a $200 fine because within 72 hours, otherwise you'll get arrested.
Wow, they're getting so clever. First of all, that's a lie, obviously. And I think... I think you figured that out. This is ransomware. But for them to take as the name of the virus, SOPA, which was the Stop Online Piracy Act that got fortunately got torpedoed in Congress, is just cracks me up. Just these virus authors, they're so funny. So SOPA was in fact a bill in front of Congress that was so heinous would have broken the internet, that everybody on the internet stood up against it. And frankly, fortunately, we got rid of it. So the SOPA virus is one of a category of viruses called ransomware. So once you get the virus on there, I don't know if it actually does erase your data, but you can't use it until you pay people. Now, I'm looking at a description of this virus on a site called uyoosecurity.com that says how to unlock it. And I will put this in the show notes, uyoosecurity.com. You can run it, and it probably will fix the problem. However, if you got that, you may have other things on there. And it worries me when I see a computer infected that even if you were able to get this infection out of the way, what kind of stuff is there that's not making any noise? Remember, the bad guys can make money in a couple of ways. This is the most blatant way, which is blackmail, basically. Give us $200 or we'll erase your hard drive. But there's other ways they can do it. For instance, they can take over hundreds or thousands of computers and sell them to spammers, saying, hey, you want to send out spam, you can use these computers. We own them. In that case, they don't want you to know they're on your system. They want to be as quiet as possible. They don't make an announcement. They sit there in the background. Similarly, they can be sold to as botnets to people who want to blackmail other sites. We'll see this coming in January when the Super Bowl happens. Probably we'll see it for the World Series, too. Gambling sites get threats. There's extortion attempts. It's the old protection scheme. It would be a shame, a terrible shame, if your website were to be off the air during the World Series. You wouldn't be able to take any bets. For $100,000, we can be sure this doesn't happen. Of course, the bad guy's real threat is, and if you don't give me the money, I'm going to send all these botnet zombie computers against you. Yours might be one of them. The problem is you can't tell. You could run this used security software, get rid of the SOPA virus, and still be infected. So I'm going to send you there, send your husband there. He doesn't have to pay $200. Whatever you do, don't give him $200. It will not erase your hard drive. Run the used security thing. You get rid of that. But then you probably should bring it to a good technician and say, wipe the drive and start over, or do it yourself. There are other programs you can run. There's antivirus software. There's malwarebytes.org, malwarebytes.org. You can run Microsoft's own malicious software removal tool. You can run a lot of programs that, will check, but there's never that certainty that you've got rid of it all. You can't be. Because it hides. So I always like to wipe it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Madonna, right?
Hey, non-32, so live radio.
So that's a Madonna song, right? Okay, let's check.
A cover.
I don't know this stuff. Leo Laporte. Yes, you probably figured this out. It's not my idea to go see Madonna. My girlfriend wants me to go.
Anything you want, dear.
Neil in Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing, Leo? How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. I'm sorry. I thought I was picking you up last call, but now I got you.
That's okay. Great. Listen, I had an issue. I just bought an Xbox a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, and I connected it up, set it up, and linked it to my computer. I have a Windows 7 machine, and I want to be able to stream content from it. However, it won't play all of the tracks. It'll play the script tracks from my CD.
Yes, because there's no copy protection on those tracks.
Right, but it won't play my iTunes track.
No, because there's copy protection on those tracks. Now, those are probably older tracks because copy protection is gone now in iTunes. That's the good news. But if you bought them more than a couple of years ago, are they older?
Some of them are older, yeah.
Yeah, those will not play because the Xbox media extender says, you can't. Now, here's the good news. In fact, everybody should do this. For $25, you can replace all of those copy-protected tracks with higher quality unprotected tracks using iTunes Match.
Do I have to buy iTunes and install?
Well, I should say there's two ways to do this. If you go to your iTunes and look for iTunes Plus, they have a new feature where you can, it's probably going to be more expensive, But it depends on how many copy protected tracks you still have. But you can upgrade. I think it was 29 cents. Upgrade each track to unprotected. But I think iTunes Match is a better deal. iTunes Match, you pay $25 once, and it gives you two things. One, it will replace. You can replace all your music with 256-bit, very high-quality AAC, unprotected. So older tracks will be upgraded, and the protection will be removed. It will also replace, if you have lower-quality rips of your own, it'll replace those if it recognizes them. And it gives you streaming capabilities, so if you have an iOS device, you can stream any of those cuts on the iOS device. I think iTunes Match, even if you only do it once, for $25, is really great. If you have more than 100 songs with copy protection, do that.
Okay, thank you. Can I throw one quick question for you?
Sure.
I'm looking to replace my phone pretty soon, but I'm thinking I have Android right now. I'm thinking of going either with another, like a Samsung Galaxy S3, for example, or perhaps a Windows phone. I know Paul Thurrott talked about a Windows phone. What do you think about it?
We're going to see these Windows 8 phones in a month, and I have to defer till then. These are good from the hardware point of view, every bit as good as a Galaxy S3. The HTC 8X is a beautiful phone, probably a better camera, maybe the best camera of any phone. But Windows Phone 8's new. The software, is more limited. I like it. It's a good interface. It's just not what everybody's using. And sometimes it's good to be, dance to the beat of a different drummer. Sometimes not. And as long as you understand what you're doing, moving to Windows Phone might be a good move. But if you've got an iPhone, you've got an investment in iOS. Oh, you don't, though. You're moving from Android. So you don't care. You don't have an investment in either one at this point. I like the Galaxy S3, by the way. I think it's probably, I've replaced it now with a Galaxy Note 2, which is very similar, just a bigger screen. I think these are arguably the best phones out there. But the competition is tough. The iPhone 5 is great. And the Windows Phone 8 phones look really good. And of the best of the breed is probably the HTC 8X. At this point, they're all good enough that it's a personal choice. There's no right answer. You have to go. I would go to a AT&T or Verizon store and look at all three of them. You can't look at the Windows phones yet. They'll be out in a month. And it's not clear whether Verizon's going to have them. AT&T will have all three. So go to the AT&T store. Look at a GS3, a Note 2. They'll have that as well. If you like a big screen, I love a big screen. The HTC 8X and the iPhone 5. Boy, it's nice. You got a great choice. They're very different devices. The iPhone 5 is like a finely made Swiss watch. It's just beautiful, really elegant. It's also fairly fragile. I've already nicked mine up, so at this point, it looks like a really beat up, finely made Swiss watch. The GS3 is a little more robust. So is the Note. Dick DiBartolo for 40 years. Make it 50 years. Has been writing.
Yeah, 50. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Has been writing for Mad Mag. He was a kid. He was a kid when he started writing for Mad Magazine. He's still doing it. And this whole time, what does he do with all that money he makes from Mad Magazine? He sinks it into gadgets. Dickie D, welcome. Hey, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a new gadget here. I don't know if you got even a chance to buy the original, because when it came out, it sold out quickly. It was the Nest Learning thermostat.
I just ordered the new one. You have it?
This is the new guy.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
So the Nest 2.0 is now thinner. You know, the original was designed by the people who designed the iPod.
Yeah,
so that's
Tony
why
Fidel,
it's so nice and
now,
shiny.
This new one replaces most thermostats in your house. That's why I ordered it, because I'm going to unscrew the old thermostat and put this one on there.
Yes, 95% of systems now. There's new software. If you have the original Nest, don't worry. You will automatically get upgraded to the new software, and that has started.
So why should I replace my thermostat with this?
Well, what's neat about this, a couple things. First of all, is you don't program it. The first week you say, I'm warm, I'm cold, I'm warm. You just set the thermostat like it's a manual thermostat. It remembers all those settings. It keeps refining those settings. It has motion sensors. If no one, and a very wide angle, 150-degree wide angle sensor, and it says, you know what? I don't see anybody roaming past here. I'm going to either lower the air conditioning, or in the winter, I'm going to lower the heat. And it does that. It looks for half an hour. If it sees no motion, it'll go to its default mode and lower everything. So it can save you money. It's so great looking. Now you can add in, if you have whole house humidifiers and dehumidifiers, you can add that into the settings.
Do you save money, you think, because of this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it you can fine-tune it so that it'll go on to the exact minute you want it in the morning. But the interesting thing is they found 90% of the people who use them want to control them remotely. So now they've added control from the Nexus 7, from the Kindle Fire, from any smartphone. So wherever you go, you can also check in, see what your Nest 2.0 is doing. And you pre-ordered it. It's the same price, $249.
It's a little pricey. It's a little pricey.
Yeah. If you want the original, they're closing them out through Lowe's for $229. But for $20, I think I would want, you know, the latest.
I ordered it on Amazon, and you know, they're a little back ordered. Or no, I guess they weren't even out yet.
No, they're not shipping. I believe the ship date is October 21st.
Yeah, that's what they said. I'll be getting it October. I'm so excited. So you like this? No,
I
wait
like
a minute. It said October 14th. That's tomorrow. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it tomorrow.
No, the 21st.
No, it says, I'm looking at it. Maybe I got the wrong one. It says
October. Maybe yours did. Okay, originally it was October 21st. It seems to be released on the 14th. Okay.
I'm excited. Dick D. Bartolo, gizwiz.biz is his website. Go there to play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of magazine from Matt. Gizwiz.biz. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We ran out of time, but we got it in. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.